Since we have some new people here, I think I would like to give a very brief introduction to the standard meditation that we teach, and then we'll go on to Vipassana instruction. So again, we start with the body, feeling grounded in your chair, on the cushion, body erect. A sense of a strong back and a soft front. The eyes open and lowered to the floor in front, 4 to 6 feet. Hands placed naturally, resting on the thighs. Attention is placed on the breath, and particularly the out-breath. So we breathe out and let go on the out-breath. There's space, there's a space or gap. As we breathe out, there's a space there before the next breath comes in. So we just rest with the breath and breathe naturally. When you notice your mind is off somewhere and you've forgotten the meditation technique of attention on the breath, just gently you can say thinking to yourself and just come back to the out-breath. Equanimity in the practice is very important, in that there's no judgment. Just let go and come back. Let go of the story or wherever you're going with your mind and just be present here. And now I would like to give instruction in Vipassana meditation. In this book, Lojong by Trolog Rinpoche, he uses the translation as insight meditation. And in Sanskrit, as I said, it's Vipassana, and in Tibetan, it's Lak Tong. it's a little confusing because we also use the word awareness for vipassana, as well as awareness for the shamatha, the sheriff, knowing the baddies are in town. So you could. So it's a little tricky because in English we don't have such exact translations, I think. But basically, as I do the technique, you'll see there's a big difference in terms of awareness from a shamatha perspective, which is just knowing you're off and you're lost your concentration or attention to that object of meditation. And there's a difference between that and what I will instruct now. So we are gaining insight to the nature of mind. And particularly in the Lojong book, we were working with slogans number 2 to 6, which have to do with the absolute bodhicitta practice. And those are all vipassana meditations. And they are vipassana meditations that allow a glimpse of the absolute bodhicitta as we contemplate them from the perspective of the natural state. So let's do the instruction, and then I'll say a few more words later on. So in a way, what you're getting tonight is sort of the tightest practice and the most open, vast practice. So in this practice, you raise your gaze, your eyes are open, sit up straight, and you're going to look straight ahead, again, not really focusing on anything. You just look out. And you rest in this space. Everything is included in this space. The noise of the cars, motorcycles, sensations. You notice it's there and you just hold your awareness open. Everything is included in the practice. Nothing is considered as a distraction. If you feel your mind is wandering, if you notice you've gone from that open, spacious awareness, you just come back to the space you've noticed, you come back. if at any point you wish to return to shamatha, you can lower your gaze and work with the shamatha first practice of counting or the second practice of the basic instruction. Slogan 5, rest in the natural state, the basis of all. This natural state is awake, open, clear, spacious. It's also called wisdom consciousness. That's Alaya Jnana, Buddha nature, absolute bodhicitta, or the state of basic awareness. From the Lojong book, Trallog Rinpoche says, for the natural way of resting, we simply maintain a sense of bare awareness without thinking about anything or forcing the mind into a concentrated state. I'll repeat. For the natural way of resting, we simply maintain a sense of bare awareness without thinking about anything or forcing the mind into a conceptual state. So we're just resting in the natural state. When we wander, we come back to this space of awareness. And everything is included in it. Sounds, sensations, thoughts, all the senses. They're actually included because they're a reminder of awake and not at all a disturbance. So within our life, we can always be in a state of practice because we always have that opportunity, no matter what we're doing, to just be present. So we'll do some more shamatha for a few minutes, and then we'll make a circle and have a discussion. If you wish to continue with a Vipassana practice, you're welcome to do that. In the last few minutes of this practice, sharpen your awareness and be with every breath. Be present with that breath. So we can make a circle, and we'll have a discussion. So any thoughts, questions, comments? What was it like? Yes.
This is just a simple question, but when you're doing the counting meditation, is there a number you count up to? I remember we talked about that, but you didn't
right.
mention it.
No, I didn't mention it. Actually, for a reason, because Trolog Rinpoche, in fact, this is the book we're using, and it's online. You can, you know, get information. Our classes are all online. It's within this book. He talks about 7, 15, and 21 breaths. I found that rather odd, but I think it's you could use 7 and then start over, or...
I think you did say 7.
I did say 7,
really? Okay.
But, you know, I think the number isn't all that important. I think the point is just to notice that how many times you're at 1, actually.
Yeah, that's true.
It made me think of...
Or how far along, how number you're at when you realize you're still counting.
That was very interesting tonight. Mm-hmm. It was a very sharp distinction for me. Say more, Muffy. What was that like?
Well, I don't know. I just got to 35, and I don't know how I got there.
Yes! Yes!
And I realized, well, that's... I'm going back to 1, and I'm not going to get this far next time. Just, you know, it made me aware
yes.
of my not practicing.
Try 108.
The wandering. Yeah. It made me... Go ahead.
Yeah, so that was actually something I was wondering about. I also have the ability to sort of keep counting without really paying attention. So
yes.
What is it that, what you know, is it the fact that you see that you've been counting, but, you know, that you're at 10, but you don't remember anything past 3? Is that sort of...
Yes,
the,
exactly. That's the point. It sharpens that point of... you're going on automatic pilot. You're counting, but your mind is somewhere totally different. You're down the road doing something else. I mean, literally, it made me think of driving to Walden Pond on Route 117, and I just you have to go on a different road. Caught, you know, and I'm on 117 all of a sudden by the Audubon, and I'm like, how'd I get here? But you could be driving and be totally unaware of what's going on. I mean, you're still aware of driving. Yeah. But so that's what it sharpens the distinction. I think that's what the counting does. You really see how far off you are, right?
It also sharpens.
Oh, go ahead. Go ahead, Mom.
It sharpens the distinction between shamatha and vipassana.
Yes.
The shamatha instruction we have has a lot of awareness in it because our eyes are open and we're aware of our surroundings. And counting sort of, you know, narrows your focus. And, you know, it takes you away from awareness and what makes you more interested in discipline. Mm-hmm. And so that's my answer.
Yes, thank you.
Yeah, but I found like I got very into like, oh, I could do this really well. I could count to seven. Yay for me. And like, so, and like wow, it's like so exciting, counting to seven. But I got really into that, and that's kind of that. I have a tendency to get into like that. I'm doing a good job, and I'm really very disciplined to the point where it's maybe not actually useful.
Mathematics teacher.
Counting.
That I could count to, no, but that I paid attention.
Uh-huh. Craig?
To me, when you're doing the counting, I feel like you're still, like when we normally would not count, when you're just paying attention to when you're thinking and when you're not. So even if I'm able to keep count of what number I'm on, if I'm noticing that, you know, I'm also thinking about something else, whatever it is, then I, you know, go back to one, you know. That's how I learned it. I used to go to a place that did counting, and mm-hmm. it was like, you know, you'd have a thought kind of in the background, but you can still sort of keep going with the numbers. But if there's a thought and you notice it's there, then that's go back to one, you know. Mm-hmm. I don't know if that's how you would teach it or just that.
Yeah, I think, the main point is noticing. That's really the main point. And then going back is sort of drawing the line again. You're willing to start over.
When Joseph was here, he talked about emphasizing the in-breath first and then the out-breath, or taking the, you know, he reversed mm-hmm. the breath. Is there any practice that does that as opposed to the way that we usually do it?
Yes, there is, yes.
Because
so
it's a different experience doing it.
How is it different when
well,
you
I think
do it that way?
I think it's different on a couple of different levels.
Uh-huh.
I think the physical experience is different. And I think the mind different. I think of it as when you... I think of it as when you take I feel as though I'm taking the world in differently. Mm-hmm. You know, when I take the breath in the opposite way of which we do it, I think I'm taking the world in and then letting it out.
Mm-hmm. Do you feel more porous that way, or is it? How would you describe the difference?
I think I'm taking the world in and then letting it out, whereas the other way, it's a little bit more about myself.
When you're working with the out-breath?
Yes.
More intensely.
Yeah.
Oh, interesting.
You know, I just was doing it this week after listening to Joseph. And
uh-huh.
I think it was a different experience. Plus, your whole diaphragm is a little differently and all. Your whole body is a little mm-hmm. different in the different way of doing the breath. So I didn't know whether there was different practices that do it differently.
There are, absolutely.
You know,
yeah, there are different practices. Yes, and some are more emphasis, and you can try that and see what that feels like as you have, you know, breathing in as the more emphasis of in-breath, and then the out-breath being less of the the technique or more relaxation perhaps.
I mean, I have to concentrate on it more because it isn't what we normally do. It's not the normal way of doing it, so I had to concentrate more.
But other practices, other Buddhist lineages, I think, do emphasize more of the in-breath as the starting point. Does anyone have any experience with that or training?
Yeah, that's good to hear, because I always felt more comfortable with the in-breath, and you describing it being porous in the world coming in is exactly how I feel it. But I wasn't sure, because we focus on outside, which always felt uncomfortable. But I like the way you put it, porous. I feel like everything's coming in, and also like my own sort of healing method that I do brings in everything in breath and then takes out. So I'm gonna maybe go back to what feels more natural for me. So.
Megan?
Interesting. I had the exact opposite because I had been doing this for a little bit of time.
This being the counting?
The counting. And because we learned it over, last winter with the monk.
On the New Year's retreat.
Yeah, the New Year's retreat. And I felt like, wow, this is amazing. And I remember either being instructed or just mentally thinking, oh, I have to start with the in-breath and then go out. And based on what I thought I heard recently, which is start on the out-breath and then go in, I was like, wow, this feels so much more natural.
Emphasis on the out-breath.
Like, just because I always feel like I have to, like, be more purposeful in terms of, when am I going to take that breath in and then start counting? Whereas it's just so much easier to just be like, I breathed out, okay. And all right, that was one. It just felt like more natural. And I didn't expect that for me. So it was interesting.
Does anybody count both?
One, yeah, that's what they want.
In breath, out breath, two is out breath.
There's different techniques, yes. Sandra.
Yeah, I took a course that was specific to walking meditation, and it was talking about ways to be in walking meditation out in the world, so where you can't walk super slowly. And one of the techniques they taught was counting up, count one, counting your steps, one, one, two, one, two, three, and then you get up to ten, and then you start going down again. So that's and that turned out to be much harder than you'd think.
I can imagine.
So yeah, and to oscillate back and forth, and then, but again, same principle. Mm-hmm. If you lose track, right. Start at one going
right.
up.
It's
all the possibilities.
There are many.
Gee, I'd be kind of concerned to be out on the street and doing anything that complicated.
Especially in traffic. Roberta?
Well, I learned at the Zen Center to count to 10, but I was always supposed to start over when I lost. So I never got past two or maybe one, two. So it was so stupid. I might get to three once in a while, but I was so agitated then. And now, and I had met with you, and I was counting the in-breaths, and you said, don't count the out-breaths. So I count the out-breaths. It feels very natural, but I still think of the in-breath as the beginning. And I don't think I'm really rigidly stuck to that, I think. I don't think I can think of the out-breath as the beginning, and then the in-breath is the finish.
Well, I think this points to a very good thing, which is there's no one way to do it. In fact, I always thought counting was always in-breath, out-breath, in-breath, out-breath, and I just didn't register with that. And when I saw it in here that the out-breath could be the first count, then all of a sudden it seemed to open the practice for me. So I think the main point is Whatever works for you, do it.
That's slogan 60.
That is slogan, that's Emily's slogan 60. 59 slogans, who wants to end at 59? There's 60 slogans. Whatever works for you, do it. I think that's the main point.
Oh, just let go.
Yeah, let go. And you know, we do a practice of Tonglen, which we're going to introduce during this program of Lojong teachings. That will be one intensive period when we do another two-hour meditation. We'll be working with Tonglen, which is the practice of sending and receiving. And you do start with the in-breath, and then you breathe out. So as I said, many different ways. Any further comments or questions in terms of the practice aspect?
What's the point, then, if everyone can do it differently?
Yeah.
What's the point of the practice? Where are we going with this?
What do you think, Harry?
Equanimity.
What's that? Equanimity?
I think we're developing the letting go. Somebody said letting go. The whole practice of our spiritual practice is to let go of attachment and things like that. So every time we return, like, to a number, it's letting go and it's practicing equanimity.
Right.
And so are we willing to let go of a storyline?
Right.
Are we willing to let go of a distraction, of, you know, a noise or something?
Or our accomplishment of getting to 10, or at least past 2, you know, are we willing to let go?
So it seems to me the side benefits are like concentration and focus and developing that. But to me, that was the value of the whole, all the efforts over the years was finally to develop equanimity, to experience also the importance of why they talk about equanimity. I always got mixed up between compassion, loving kindness, sympathetic joy. They all seem like nice values.
Sympathetic
equanimity
joy.
Come.
And what? What did you say? Oh, where does that
equanimity come from in all that? It's almost like it's a totally different thing. So anyway, that was my...
Well, equanimity is extremely important, and I think when we do shamatha practice, that equanimity is about, as you said, you put it very well, letting go and letting go of the judgment. I'm not doing it right. I have too many thoughts. I must be doing it wrong. This is supposed to be calm abiding. I am never calm, and it's so much work. You let go. That's just a thought. That's just a thought. And you have to have some trust in the practice, even though you don't maybe know why you're even doing it. But there's something that you feel, there's some value or benefit in it. If you feel there is, then there's some motivation to go on. And the equanimity is, I think, a lack of... judgment, whether you're doing it right or wrong, or you had a good meditation. Now the next day you want another good meditation, and all of a sudden you're totally crazy and you can't even follow, you know, one breath at all. It's then you just go, here I am, I'm willing to practice in whatever state of mind I have, and you just keep going. That's, I think, the power of it. Any thoughts on the Vipassana aspect? What was that like for people? Was it new to people, or what was your? Did it seem really different from what you've been doing with shamatha, or maybe you've been doing that practice? I don't know.
I find the Vipassana a little hard to do in the sangha indoors because you look up and there's just, it's hard not to look at stuff. But I like doing it when I do sitting outside because then you can look up and just, there is the space. Like, the spaciousness comes with. In this room, there's just not a lot of spaciousness.
Unless you're the umse in the summer and the door is open.
Yeah.
That's a real plus. You get to sit in the front row.
And look at the empty.
But you brought up a very good point, Elise. The Vipassana is actually, it's very helpful to do it in open space and a blue sky or an open sky or a higher space so that you have a sense of a bigger view and you can just look out to that space. And that's why I think there's sort of a natural feeling in at the ocean. When you're standing at the ocean, we look out at the ocean. We look out into that vast expanse. And I think it's sort of a natural clicking into that Vipassana experience, or at the top of a mountain. And in fact, when we talk about absolute bodhicitta, just having sometimes those experiences or those images is very helpful to understand what's being described there in terms of that open, spacious quality.
So I suppose, just getting back to what Elise says, because I understand, because also then there's people, you have to contend with people, and for me anyway, and but really being able to take that spaciousness, of course, in the tiniest room with the most amount of people and it hot and sweaty and whatever, you know, like all the everything all there, and you go, yes, the mountaintop, you know.
Right. Right.
That's the aim.
Yeah, ultimately, yes.
I know I often meditate in our family room, and I discovered that Vipassana didn't work for a while. We just got a new TV, and even if it's off, that this undesirable object being in my field really interferes with the process. Hopefully that excitement will fade, and I'll be able to treat it as a space.
You can be aware of that feeling. Right?
Or look out the window.
That's true.
But look out.
Turn around.
When I went up to Wonderwell this past summer, they actually taught us the open sky meditation, the sky meditation. Uh-huh. And that was really just very neat. Mm-hmm. Except then they said, go lie down outside and look up at the sky. And what I discovered is you lie on the ground and there were like bugs all over you.
Not quite so open and spacious. That could be distracting.
I find I can't do the Vipassana, really. I just daydream. Mm-hmm. But when I first started, I actually feel good about this space, because this is a room that I feel safe mm-hmm. in. And I love the things in it and the people. I'm here in this space with these people. And I'm trying to just be and daydream. So I can't stay with it.
Yeah, that's fine. And you can use both practices in your daily practice if you wish to do so. I recommend that you start with shamatha and get some sense of grounding. And if you feel you want to incorporate the vipassana, you could add that. And usually it's helpful to end with shamatha too. But you don't have to. I mean, you can do whatever. Make it your practice. Yeah.
I actually like to do the Vipassana if I'm outside doing the Heart Sutra mm-hmm. and then getting to the mantra to just sort of look up. Mm-hmm. Like there really is somewhere beyond to go.
Yeah,
like, opposed to like to the neighbor's yard, maybe a little further than the neighbor's yard if you look up.
Right. Yeah. And I think, to Megan's point, there's actually the possibility of space in any situation. I mean, I think often of, you know, the comments that different Tibetan teachers have made or I read from people sort of after the communists came in, they would have all this broadcast, you know, these, you know, noise being broadcast and slogans and all this stuff, and that people who were meditating would just work with that in their practice, this external noise, you know. I mean, and, you know, we always think we can go somewhere else, you know, and get our peaceful situation, but in fact, life isn't like that all the time, and we never know what situation we're going to end up in. We just don't know, you know. So the thing is, with practice, it's something you carry with you all the time, and in any situation, you have the opportunity. In any situation, you have that opportunity to either solidify and whatever, you know, be caught in your emotion or whatever is happening, or to relax and let go and allow some space to be there. So I think that's the power of the practice, that you can bring it anywhere. And it's nice, and it's good to know different techniques, because also our mind, we're in different spaces at different times. And one thing that's really helped me is noticing before I practice what state I'm in, so that I then can apply the right remedy, you could say, if you want to put it that way. And if you're really agitated, it may be better to just do a more strict shamatha practice to bring yourself into the present. And when there's some sense of calm or space, in a way, calm is a deceiving word, because the thoughts are still going, but you could actually feel like you're working with it, then you could kind of open. And you always have that option to raise your gaze and look out. And then when things get wild again, or you feel confused, you can lower your gaze. So it is actually possible to work with your own practice in ways that are beneficial to you. So I hope that makes sense.
You said earlier, like, mm-hmm. go with whatever works for you personally, mm-hmm. but at the same time, don't be super rigid about it. Be open to other possibilities and exploring different things that might work with different situations and mm-hmm. might open up opportunities for different types of awareness and insight and presence.
Yes, right, exactly. And I think the practice we're going to teach, and many of you know, Tonglen, is sending and taking in difficult situations and breathing out relief. Mm-hmm. You think of many possibilities for applying that in hard situations that you come across, and they may not be personally affecting you, but you may be in an environment where something is happening and you really physically can't intervene, but you could actually work with the energy of the situation. So yeah, you're right. I mean, there's a lot of possibilities, definitely. So I think we'll close here.